Yeah, I certainly wouldn't argue. I see the body as simply the...
Nice, anytime, really introducing him. Welcome to KSAN.
Happy to be here.
I have a challenge from Paul Krasner, which I'd like to read to you. I got that out of the way, first on the agenda, on his Mothers of the American Revolution Stationery. I hereby challenge Tim Leary to a debate resolved that promoting a suburban space shuttle program serves as a diversion of creative energy from changing the system whose prison you have escaped twice. Signed, Paul Krasner. And Paul says that a group at Stanford has secured a hall for the event if you care to meet him. Do you wish to respond to the challenge on the air?
No. We've got better things to do, really.
That's out of the way. I guess we should also say that you'll be appearing tomorrow night at 8 o'clock at the College of Marin in Kentfield, and the tickets for that appearance are available at the College of Marin box office, which I understand opens daily at 10:30, and that perhaps people should phone the College of Marin to find out if seats are still left.
Does that mean you don't wish to defend your space shuttle ideas to Paul Krasner?
Well, I don't have to defend anything. I don't believe in debates. I don't believe in adversary process. I could give you 100 reasons why I'm not thrilled by that prospect. That answer your question?
Yeah. Let's talk about space colonies a bit. Why do you think we should leave the planet instead of straightening it out?
Well, I don't think you should leave the planet. I think that there are many, many reasons why space migration is inevitable. We squeezed off planet Earth like birds from a nest. Or you could use the embryological metaphor. This planet is a womb. We've been seeded here. We've grown to an embryonic state where we're ready to leave. I could cite you the ecological reasons why we can't go on living down here in the numbers in which we are now. I could cite you the political reasons that it's going to become more and more of a vicious type police state, shootout society unless we have some window. I could cite you the need for hope. I could cite you the historical evidence that migration has always attracted the most intelligent and most courageous women and men in history, that evolution works through migration. Mm-hmm. But I'm not trying to advocate this. One time we were all underwater, and some of us wanted to leave and climb up on land. I'm sure the AMA, that's the Amoeba Medical Association, tried to demonstrate that calcium was a dangerous drug, caused mutations, and that if God had intended amoebas to grow bones, she wouldn't have made calcium illegal. I'm not trying to sell anything. I mean, I'm sending out a signal to those who are bored with things down here to move onward and upward.
There's a new book out by the historian L.S. Stavrianos called The Promise of the Coming Dark Age that we've been reading around here because he's coming to visit this weekend. And he has a theory that time after time, mankind has broken a frontier, mostly geographic barriers, and that all of mankind, even the poorest, have profited from that. But that now that there are no physical barriers left, that will force the Earth to get its act together. And yet the prospect of an escape hatch would seem to set for us a new frontier and postpone the straightening out here on the planet. So that's why I'm leery of it. No joke intended.
I certainly agree with the first premise that throughout history, the most intelligent and the genetically predisposed and determined have moved out. It's simply smarter to move out than to fight over the shrinking resources. I would say, for example, that the people who live in the old world, that's Europe, Asia, and Africa, are simply lower species. They're lower in intelligence and they're back in evolution. When you go back east, you're going back in time and down in IQ. America is simply an intelligence to
us. That puts us on the top of the heap here.
Absolutely. I want to say to my fellow Californians that California is an intelligence test, an evolutionary test that we have passed. The fact that we're here on the farthest frontier of human migration means that we're going to be the ones to lead the species to the next movement. Now, there's a tremendous movement now which is called the doom boom. People going around saying it's all going to end. The Club of Rome says it scientifically. Hal Lindsey and the evangelists saying, that Christ is going to do away with the bad guys and come and get the good guys. I welcome all this doomsday thinking because it's simply preparatory for a movement outwards. Before a species mutates or migrates, there's always this uneasiness. They know something's going to happen. Now, as far as solving the problems down here, we can't. You're never going to solve the problems in Europe because Europeans are like animals. We sent Egil Harriman, was it, or somebody over there to straighten out Cyprus, the Turks and the Greeks. My friends, the Turks and the Greeks have been fighting each other for 4,000 years, like straightening out coyotes. coyotes versus the wolves. Carter wants to have buffer zones in the Middle East. They've been fighting each other for 6,000 years in the Middle East. You want to have buffer zones between the lions and the tigers?
Now we need one in Washington.
Yeah,
well, absolutely. I was in Washington just a week ago, and I said, you know, so this is a creepy town full of creepy people. Nothing's going to happen in Washington. It's going to happen in the grassroots, if you'll excuse the pun. It's going to come from the Southwest. It's going to come from California. Now, this argument that we got to settle all the problems down here before we dare move out is really ridiculous. I'm sure that before we left the water and climbed on the shoreline, the amoeba establishment said, how dare you climb under the shoreline when we haven't settled the problems of the porpoises and the dolphins, or we haven't settled the problems of the pollution in the lagoon. I'm sure that when the first courageous women and men came over to this continent, the old world says, well, how dare you leave Europe when we haven't settled the problem of the Catholics and the Protestants? We haven't built the cathedral yet. You can't leave us here. You've got to stay here. Those problems are never going to be solved. The only way to solve problems is to mutate and migrate.
Let's talk about mutation a second. You used the metaphor of calcium a moment ago in the amoeba society that preceded us by a few years. And I assume that was a metaphor for drugs today. You quoted recently as saying that you go to visit an executive, he'll shut the door and talk to you about his last trip.
Yeah, that's really
acid is still widely used and is still an effective tool in growth or mutation, as you put it?
I don't know much about drug use. I've been out of circulation, you know, for 8 years, so I don't know what's happening. I occasionally look at high times, which I really consider to be low times, but, you know, the market reports on how much, but I really don't know. This thing about the new establishment, though, is interesting. I've been traveling around the country, as you know, and the successful, intelligent heads from the 60s are now running the country. There's no question of it. I was in a bank in L.A. about a week ago, and a manager, can you believe it, the manager came over, and he grabbed my hand, and he had tears in his eyes, and said, I love you, and that's all. And I said, what about my loan?
Yeah, what about your loan?
Was he
really running the bank?
He's doing his best, yeah. But we are the establishment. For the last 8 years of the Nixon administration, we were all pissed off, we were all unhappy, we were all miserable. It started with the Kennedy assassinations. It was a down trip. We became cynical, it became sophisticated to be in positions of postures of dissent. You have to be. But this is over, and liberals and radicals and progressives have got to accept the fact that we won the battle of the 60s.
You really think
so? Or not, yeah. The main issues that we were struggling for, the liberations that we wanted to...
Economic justice, the United States is propping up dictatorships around the world.
Economic issues and political issues were not the issues of the 60s. The issues of the 60s were individual freedom, gay liberation, women's liberation, sexual liberation, liberation of the body, liberation of the consciousness. The 60s revolution was not an economic, nor was it a political revolution, and we never pretended. We always said, skip politics and economics. If that's your trip, by all means, do it, but that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about liberating individual freedom. And I want to tell you this, that the movement of civilization from east to west, that is from China, through India, through Europe, to the New England states, to California, the movement from east to west is a movement of freedom. China is the ultimate unfree society. They absolutely deplore individualism in China. That's the number one sin. Hooliganism, which means ordinary individualism in Russia, is considered the number one sin. The freedom to be an individual, the freedom to be yourself and to find your own authentic inner structure and to do something about it is peculiarly a Western phenomenon, and the farther west you are, the more room there is, literally room, to evolve and grow.
No, from my standpoint, China's off to the west. They argue there that they are mutating, that they have found a new way to be human, collectively.
Oh, I wouldn't disagree with that at all. You see, our foremothers and fathers left the water to climb on the shoreline. Now, the fish continue to evolve. I'm sure they have shinier gills and flashier fins and all that. Oh, yeah, the Chinese are going to evolve into the super-duper insectoid anthill. There's no question of that. And everyone's going to be fed and running around nicely, but there ain't going to be any romance. There's not going to be any new thinking. There's not going to be any cultural experiments. It's going to be an efficient anthill, I grant you that. It'll evolve.
You're listening to the Bonnie Simmons Show on KSAN in San Francisco.
It is.
Yeah. This is Bonnie Simmons. I have a little laryngitis today.
No,
my guest is Tim Leary.
Let me, since we broke here, take care of a couple of things, and then we'll come back. Also, for people at home listening, we will be taking some phone calls. However, this is not traditional to say on the air, but think before you call and figure out what you want to say. We'd like to fit in as many as we can and sort of keep them from being
let's start taking those
rambling.
Okay. 986-6244 is our number here at KSAT.
Do we want to start doing that?
Let's start taking them real soon.
Oh, you have to be around here.
This is the most phenomenally successful group in America. Their name is Boston.
He's obviously involved.
Murder by Death is now playing at theaters and drive-ins everywhere. Check your local newspaper for a listing.
What about your former colleague, Richard Alpert, now Baba Ram Dass, now just Ram Dass?
Yeah.
He would say that the new frontier is inner, and that going to outer space isn't going to bring anybody any more happiness or contentment. But the frontier is inside. That's the evolution.
Yeah.
That's the course of evolution, is true consciousness, true getting it together here on this planet.
Well, I would agree that step number one in evolution is inward. And you see, there's nothing different in what I'm saying now than what I was saying in the 60s. One evolves from the other. And let me make this very clear. You have to go within before you go without. You can't go any farther outside than you have gone with inside. Anything that you do externally, politically or migrating or running around, is not based on an inner vision of, you know, of your real soul or your authenticity, then you're a robot. So by all means, go within. You can't do the outer thing before you do the inner thing. I don't want to go off the planet with anyone that hasn't mastered their body, that hasn't confidence in their body, that love their own body, control their own body for beauty and pleasure. Nor do I want to go with anyone that hasn't mastered their brain, you know, can use their head as we taught people how to do in the 60s. But you will find that once you go within, then the challenge is to come back out and link up in higher levels of fusion, or if you want, love, or social or communal life. The space migration movement is simply externalizing, giving us room to live out the many individual realities that people discovered during the 60s. That one leads right to the other.
What would the next frontier be? Any ideas on that after outer space?
Well, as a matter of fact, yeah, I've written a book which is called Exopsychology. It's a manual on the use of the brain according to the instructions of the manufacturers. This book will be, actually, it's just been coming out today and it'll be on sale tomorrow at the lecture at the College of Marin. And in this book, I list the next 12 mutations that the human species, or some of the human species, is going to get involved in. Briefly, you have to discover your body, then you leave the planet, then you master your brain, you learn telepathy, you learn ESP, you learn neuroelectric communication, then you master your then you learn how to hook up with other people in these incredible love relationships which are telepathic, because every mutation, every advance in consciousness must lead to a higher level of love. And I'll make that right clear right at the beginning too. I'm doing this because I want to be a better lover, and the more I mutate, the more fun I have in lovemaking, and the faster and higher I can fly with my loved one in precise formation. Now, after you learn how to use your brain and get into telepathic lovemaking, then comes the DNA code. You learn how to master the DNA code, you get into genetic engineering, you get to dial and tune the aging loop so you can be whatever age you want, as long as you want, and then you get into a new kind of a symbiotic DNA love relationship, in which is intraspecies or symbiotic, and after that, you get into the... I can go on. Why bother?
Keep going.
Yeah.
But does this
is all based on science. It's that everything I'm saying is based upon current experimental research stuff. It all seems very logical. The trajectory of evolution from the water to the shoreline to the forest to the trees to flight and then off the planet is just so obvious. The DNA has designed us to evolve to become more intelligent. And intelligence means to fly faster and higher with greater precision and more exquisite link-ups.
Does exquisite link-ups and more evolved love and pure love... How can that include...
I didn't say pure. It's complicated.
No, it's
pure.
Not pure. Okay. Well, any kind of love. Does that... How can that possibly include a vision of looking back on this planet with all the people suffering and a planet dying? Or are you going to go as a bodhisattva and go up into space, and once you've gotten there and developed this... further love, come back down and save the rest of the
You're not going to save. See, if you look look at the situation, Americans are smarter than Europeans. Europe is now living off American vision, American technology, American drugstores, American music. Within 25 years, we space migrants are going to be giving the energy to the Earth. We're going to knock the Arabs out of business because we're going to be using solar satellite powers, stations beaming energy down. We'll be sending down manufactured goods. We're going to take care of the old planet, just the way America is taking care of the... But I want to say that it's definitely an evolutionary... You know, it's like be kind to animals. We're going to take care of this planet down here, struggling with the good guys and the bad guys. Do you know that I'm Irish? In Ireland today, the Catholics are still killing Protestants, and Catholic kids are taught to hate Protestant kids. Now that's what, 400 years old? You can't change that. There's nothing you can do about it. Give them food. Leave a window open for those that want to mutate. The smart Irish, the smart Africans, the smart Chinese can mutate. They can come along, but all means we invite them. But yes, our posture to the old world, just as we now protect the whales, as we're trying to protect the starving people in Africa and Asia, yeah, we're going to take care of you people down here, and mainly we're going to amuse you, because the most imaginative and the intelligent are going to go up there. You're not going to have any new ideas. There hasn't been one new idea down here.
If you can go to space and deliver good television,
that's a good
idea. I'm all in favor.
I guarantee you that. We're going to up-level Archie Bunker to... we're going to get Archie Bunker high.
What if you've got a loved one who is incapable of mutating? Does the loved one stay behind?
That's a genetic tragedy. It happens all the time.
That was a nice question, though.
That was a good question. Before we go to the calls...
All right, I think the number one duty you have to someone you love is to try to send mutational signals to them, because most of us are going to have got in our DNA code the possibility of evolving. Like Friday night, tomorrow night at the College of Marin, I'm going to give actually three lectures. I'm going to give a lecture about the past and explain why the 60s are the most important decade of, I think, American history. The 60s are misunderstood now. People don't understand what happened there, and they're kind of sweeping under the rug. I think people should know about the 60s, because you can't deal with the 70s and 80s unless you understand the 60s. Then we'll have a slideshow which shows what life in the future will be like. And then the third part of my lecture will be about the future and include two mutation experiments. I want to give an opportunity to everyone that comes to that lecture a chance to mutate. So we'll darken the hall. I have electromagnetic tapes which have been prepared by a special studio in Southern California. I warn people, you're likely to have irreversible changes take place in your brains if you hear this signal. So leave the room or put your hands over your ears, and then we play this signal. There are two of them, and I'm trying to mutate those that are ready to mutate. So if you love someone and he or she is slow about mutating,
send them to Marin. You could have the Marin people mutate into beings that don't need water. That'd probably
be right. Oh, I want to tell you that. See, we space people are delighted by this winter, because there are 20-foot snowdrifts in Buffalo, and there's a drought in California. There's no gas in Ohio, and the fruit is dying in the vine in Florida. The lesson is there. This planet is inhabitable, and the smart ones are going to start moving on. But we'll take care of those of you that don't live.
Our guest is Dr. Timothy Leary, in case you haven't figured that out, in case you've joined us late. We want to take calls in a second. I want to ask one more question before we do that. Let's assume for a minute that something you said earlier is true, that there was a victory on the part of those of us who were banded together in the 60s for internal change and so forth, and that the current administration in some way may reflect that change. Nixon and the gang are gone. You're crossing your fingers, and I guess we all are. Some of us already have given up after only a few weeks. But assuming that Nixon's out of office and Klein, Dienst, and Mitchell and that gang, and they can't get to you, when you were in jail and called before the grand jury and all that craziness was going on, how were they trying to use you? Now it can be told. They can't get at you anymore. You're safe. You're surrounded by friends. What were they trying to do with you?
Discredit me. They're trying to sow paranoia, confusion among counterculture people, and to discredit me.
Why did you testify at all? Wouldn't you have immunized yourself against being discredited by behaving however intolerable it might have been in terms of your personal freedom, the way that a lot of the people who believed you and listened to you in the 60s expected? Silence before a grand jury followed by a strip cell, if that's what it took? Is martyrdom unpleasant to you?
Well, yeah. Number one, I definitely disapprove of martyrs. Number two, I didn't really... Number three,
did you want your lawyer George Tulin to go to jail?
No, I didn't want him to go to jail. He wasn't indicted by anything I said. No, I'm sorry about poor George. He shouldn't. That was really too bad. During the last 15 years, I've been involved with some of the toughest gangs in this world. When I was in Europe, for example, with the FBI, the CIA, Interpol, the Jerusalem Bureau, the KGB. When I was in Algeria, the FLN, there was Al-Fat, there was PLO. I'm sure the Israeli intelligence is really running everything. And not to mention what goes on in prisons where you're dealing with the toughest gangs, all sorts of mafias, bikers, the different...
You made your peace with some of those gangs in prison, though. They helped you, right?
Well, you have to work out tough eyeball-to-eyeball relationships with each group. You have to... There's turf. It's all lower primate or mammalian stuff. A lot of heavy things were done to me. Now, I'm a good vibe person. I have no bitterness. I have no resentment. And I'm not here to tell you any of these things, except to say that Time magazine had an article about the Russian dissenters just about 2 weeks ago, in which they listed the terrible things that the KGB was doing to those magnificent people, like Solzhenitsyn, like Sakharov, like Ginsburg, like Polak, and so forth. And I'm totally with these women and men in Russia, and I admire Carter for sending them some help. On the other hand, I want to point out that all this hand-wringing that Time magazine was doing was rather ironic, because the American government and Nixon did all those things and worse to me and my family and my wife and my kids.
The same things are going on in prison
today. Not to mention what
right.
The left-wing lawyers did to me when I was in Algeria, and the number of ways in which I was used, betrayed, abused, and so forth. Now, I'm not complaining, because number one, I grew, I learned from this, I'm extremely strong and realistic now. So I have no complaints. On the other hand, I have no a need to defend myself. No one was hurt by what I did. The judge and jury and liberal people that like to sit around in parlors, making up their minds about the situation they understand. If I want to feel badly about the rumors and the slanders about me, fine. It's their realities. But if I really trying to tell you that I'm not backing away from this issue, but I have no desire to defend what I did, because it gets involved in trying to explain that it's a tough, tough ball game with double and triple agents. And as far as the lawyers are concerned, I was interviewed or a man from the Arizona Law School wanted to interview me for the Law School Review. I said, you don't want to interview me on lawyers. He said, yeah, I do. I said, okay, here's what I'd do. I'd put every lawyer in the country in prison right now with a natural life sentence. And on an individual basis, case by case, we could consider some of them for parole if they would promise to give up the adversary process. Now, of course, 90% of the lawyers can't give up the adversary process, because they just thrive on trouble and troublemaking. So we'd have minimum securities for the lawyers. They could have congenial or connubial visits. We could get them all the law books. They could file writs about the dining hall. They could...
Your current lawyer is a teamster from Baton Rouge.
Yeah.
How does he feel about this? About these theories of the law? Does he think he's bringing you along, or do you think you're bringing him along?
He agrees with me.
Really?
He agrees with me. And I think most... there are a few honest lawyers around, and they agree with me. And by the way, I want to tell your audience, I beg you, don't believe anything I'm saying today. It's my job simply to stimulate your nervous system to think, to shatter some of your images, to get you to change, possibly. But the human brain is not built for belief. You know, that the human mind is like an ice tongs. You hang on to one idea.
If you go out and kill a lawyer, it's not a defense that Dr. Leary suggested you do.
Oh, I'm very nonviolent. I don't believe in any violence whatsoever. I mean, after all, superior beings don't... I'm very ecologically good about lower forms of life.
We've got a whole bunch of phone calls lined up.
Yeah,
Bonnie, what do you want to do? Take them now, or?
Oh, we'll take them in a minute.
Business? Okay.
Yeah.
Right after these words, we'll be back.
Actually, we have some silence coming your way.
Music is full of quiet.
I'm speaking, incidentally, tomorrow night, 8 p.m., at the College of Marin Gym. That's in Kentfield. And the topic is American Culture, 45 through 85. That's 1945 through 85. Let's take some calls and see what people out there have to say.
Turn on, tune in, and take off.
This is KSAN in San Francisco. Hi, you're on the air.
Yeah, I was wondering...
You have to turn down your radio. You can't do it.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was on the... lag, weird me out.
Yeah, mutate, mutate.
Mr. Larry, sir, I was wondering what the legalities, what all your legal hassles are and how they're turning out. I was saw you in San Luis Obispo a couple times, the same week Ronald Reagan showed up and the whole thing. I was just wondering what's happening with it. Thank you. I'm going to hang up and listen to the air.
Okay.
Well, contrary to rumor, I'm out on bail, still fighting a half ounce of marijuana wrap. It goes back to 64. I just lost my first appeal in the Fifth Circuit Court. Can you believe that 11 years later, 12 years later, three old judges are still harassing me on a 10-year sentence for less than half an ounce of grass? My lawyers are still appealing it, and that's the way it is. And I'm still rustling up money for the lawyers.
Okay,
some things change and some don't.
Decriminalization hasn't made it to the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals. Another call?
Hi, this is Kay Sanger on the air.
Hi. I would like to ask Dr. Leary to describe his vision of the space migration, how it would happen, and what will happen when he gets out there, or when we all get out there if we go.
Well, when you think of space migration, don't think of Star Trek, 2001, Galactic Cowboys and Indians. We're demystifying space. Think of cylinders or any sort of bodies. Matter of fact, I like the word bodies. 30 miles long, several miles in diameter, in which there may be 40 or 50 valleys, in which the climate would be selectomatic, and in which the landscaping and the environment would be exactly voted on by the small group that inhabit that village valley. We must domesticate space. See, the first step in migration is always macho masculine. You get the astronauts, you get the cosmonauts saluting the flag, you get the Homeric Greek heroes, you get the freebooters like Sir Francis Drake and so forth. Once they discover that the world is not flat, nor is the world closed, then we have to domesticate the new territory, which is space. So that's where the women come in, that's where the children come in. The real issue now is art, architecture, new forms of communal life. The reason why we're doing this is not for tinker toy hardware in space. The reason we're doing this is to increase human options. I'll guarantee you that anyone who comes to my lecture tomorrow night will leave that hall with some options that they didn't know they had when they came in. And that's the key to evolution, both personal and species. Chances, possibilities, choices, options to evolve. There will be, within 25 years, worlds, mini planets made up of bisexual vegetarians. There will be mini planets made up of National Rifle Association people.
Sounds like Mill Valley.
Right. There will be.
You're told on the Golden Gate.
Right, exactly. There's no water. We'll get you all the water you want. And there's also room to move out. You're right. Think of the best aspects of terrestrial existence, and you can bring it with you. You see, when we were underwater, the establishment people down there said, hey, the land isn't hospitable to life. So the technical problem then, in order to evolve from the water to the land, was we had to build time ships, which of course are bodies. Inside the bodies, we brought the ocean with us. As we well know, the salinity and temperature of the body is pretty close to that of the primordial sea. Now, when we leave the planet to live in space, and we're not going to planets, we're simply going to void and build the cylinders around empty space, we're going to bring both the ocean and the Earth with us. We're going to get the topsoil from the moon, and we're going to build the condominiums of our dream. Think of space migration as a destination resort. Think of it as a pleasure world. Think of it as
Lake Havasu City.
There you go. And actually, I'm meeting this weekend with some top investment people and some liberal, turned-on, psychedelic bankers and scientists, and we're going to discuss literally forming a company for real estate in space. But it's going to be more along the lines of resorts rather than Alaska. And I said, the first wave is going to be construction. So sure, we'll have the dancing halls and we'll have all that. But then the school ma'ams will come along, and within 25 years, the second wave will make it condominiums.
Why don't you take the ladies up and have them build it, and then the men can come up later?
I don't want to
accuse you of being a sexist, but you seem to have a very coherent vision. I phoned Princeton this morning and talked to Brian O'Leary, who's a colleague of Gerard O'Neill, the man who thought up this stuff, and asked him what they felt about having you as the number one advocate of this, since the money
in Congress is presided over by Congressman Olin Tiger Teague of Texas. And as I told Brian O'Leary that if you proposed to make hydrogen bombs up there, you would probably have the appropriation instantly from Teague. But were you the best flack for this sort of thing? And he said there was sort of a trade-off between the huge numbers of people that you recruited for the notion and your bad reputation in Teague's committee. Would you like to give the address for the L5 Society in Tucson, or is the one you're forming going to supplant that?
No, I want to tell our audience today about the L5 Society. If you want to become an 80s activist, if you want to really get out in the street for space migration, join the L5 Society. It's 1620 North Park Avenue in Tucson. That's 1620 North Park Avenue in Tucson. They'll send you a newsletter, which is really the most mind-blowing literature that I've ever read. Scientific, hardware, ecological, demographical, cultural, aesthetic blueprints of how we're going to create new worlds in space.
80s? 90s? What's your timetable?
Well, O'Neill, O'Neill's book, The High Frontier, is now for sale at bookstands. The High Frontier by Gerard O'Neill is published by Morrow. That gives you some of the background of this. O'Neill says it can be done 6 years. We can have a space colony 6 years after we start.
Using shuttle technology that will be available in 2 years, right?
The shuttle is already being tested and is going to go by 1980-81, there'll be routine shuttle flights, 50, 70 a year, and they need people, and they need experiments, and they need projects to fill up that space.
Yeah.
That runs into orbit are going to be as routine as 747s within 5 years.
Brian O'Leary, this is slightly off the subject, but I guess it really is on the subject, told me that there'll be a meeting at NASA in Houston next week to a workshop on capture of asteroids, a plan to build craft in space from materials taken up by shuttle to catch up with the asteroids with those craft to begin mining the asteroids and then taking the stuff that the asteroids themselves have and creating a giant drive which would reverse the thrust, bring it into place at this static midpoint between Earth and Moon and provide the raw materials for building the space cylinder. And we'll be hearing a lot more about that, I guess.
Yeah, sometimes liberals or progressives from the 60s, you know, haven't changed, say to me, well, you know, monopolies and IBM and the oil companies, and I said, listen, they will steal the solar system from us because the real energy, the real mineral wealth, the limitless space is up there, and that's why I'm doing this flak stuff and why I'm talking about space migration, simply to alert people that unless it becomes a citizen pilgrim mothers and fathers operation or Mormon church operation, whatever you want to call it, sure, the government's going to take over and NASA's going to take over and the big businesses.
Well, see, I'm a commie in favor of space travel. Mm-hmm. But I fear that by casting your lot with the folks who have the literal power to get out of what O'Neill calls the gravity well, you may have granted them ownership of that thing out there. It would be like the Howard Johnsons in space in 2001.
Yeah. Well, listen, it's not... Yeah, the interesting political issues are space. The key political conflicts of the next 20 years are going to be who controls space, who goes, what's going to be done up there. And that's going to be fun. If anyone still has political aspirations, the real action is going to take place in who controls space. But we see NASA people think they own space. Can you believe that?
That's right. They're the only ones who can get there, effectively, in terms of what ownership means.
We have to remind them that, you know, they're simply our servants. I don't take any stuff from these NASA people. And by the way, there are a lot of young NASA scientists that are turned down. They're secret heads and closet hippies. So I've got a big constituency within NASA. But I tell these people, NASA is simply Amtrak. It's your job. You've got to it's your monopoly to get us up there. And it's none of your business. Yeah, right. Why we go or who's going to go. We pay our ticket and we go up there. And then we build our own little worlds up there. And that's really quite inexpensive. It's cheaper to build a mini planet up there than to build a condominium down here for the same number of people.
Until the unions organize in space.
This is KSAN in San Francisco. Talking to Tim Leary for lunch today. And we're just going to keep going for a while.
No calls?
We could do this. Let's give some tickets away.
Okay. 986-6244 is our number here.
Hi, this is KSAN. You're on the air.
Yes, hi. I'd like to ask Dr. Leary. First, I'd like to tell him that I agree entirely about what he said about the advancements of civilization towards the West and that we've reached the end of our bounds here and have to go somewhere. And I was curious to know, troubled in my mind, is this a totally scientific technological adventure he's advocating to go into outer space, or is it a blend of technology and the spiritual evolution of evolving through pure knowledge and total knowledge?
that's a great question. I'm glad you asked it because it comes up all the time. There's no pure technology because all technology is an extension of the human nervous system or human consciousness and intelligence. And in my debates and in my political disagreements with NASA and Washington bureaucrats in the aerospace movement, I tell them, you guys have the machine all set up because the hardware to do this is done. But what you don't have is the metaphor. You don't know why you're doing it. And the metaphor comes before the machine. That, by that I mean the inner has to precede the outer. And you have to be going up there not to just bring your middle class bourgeois life, you know, up there. It has to be part of a vision because it was always a vision. The Plymouth mothers and fathers came here for a vision. And the Shakers and the Quakers moved west because of a vision. It's always some inner imperative that leads those that are smart enough and courageous enough to migrate to do it. So the inner has to precede the outer, and this is the real issue today, and that's why I'm talking on radio and giving lectures to because we want the software people, we got to humanize space. If we sit back and let them, the scientists, take over technology, then they're going to produce a robot society up there of the astronaut type. I say we got to eroticize the scientist and scientize the eroticist.
Eroticizing the scientist is a tall order.
No, it's not, because we have in this country now a new generation of scientists, you know, age 30 to 40, who went through the 60s and got turned down in the 60s. And I've been going around talking to scientists, and when you get them in a quiet mood, many of them will confess that they're closet humanists.
At this point in time, aren't we in a big danger of just continuing our pollution of what we have here right into outer space?
Well, I see pollution, for example, smog might be, according to the DNA pre-program, a stimulus to our nervous system to tell us to move. It's always that way. Overpopulation is a stimulus to move. Temperature aversions, all these things we look upon as being disasters are simply DNA jogging us. Hey, come on, get moving. You're not supposed to sit back in your affluence in the suburbs and, you know, just spin rock and roll records. It's time to get up and move again. So, sure, we're in a, evolution is always precarious. It's always a cliffhanger situation, and you got to keep moving. So I see all these, the pollution, the doomsday saying, the eschatology, the sense even of crime and despair, that hopelessness. These are all signs. We got to open up a new window for our visions.
I don't want to dominate the line, but I would like to ask one quick question. What do you think about people like Von Donegan and other people who advocate that we have already been inhabited and we already are a mutation created by some other life or energy form that's been here and preceded us?
Well, it's of interest to me that like 60% of the American people believe in UFOs. I don't, but I love the fact that people are looking upward. Von Donegan's popularity is something I think is a sign, a premonition that we're going to be moving up. Now, I disagree with Von Donegan on the techniques. I think that we were seeded here. I think I'm a clone. I think I was cloned here 2.5 billion years ago, and I've evolved to a position where I'm going to leave here with my friends and go out and contact our relatives in outer space. Now, who seeded us? Who is the super race that started all this? We, in the future, did it. And we're going to find ourselves in a more advanced form when we swim off the planetary ocean and get up there to free space.
Are you familiar with the work of Jacques Vallée at the Institute for the Future?
Yeah, I met him. I met him about a month ago.
It sounds like an echo of Vallée in his book, The Invisible College, which says that UFOs are probably in the nature of commercials or previews of coming attractions and are media rather than objects, and appear with a sporadicity, if I may use which is equivalent to the patterning of Skinner's conditioning, so that they show up enough to make us believe in them, then they go away, and the way in which they show up and what they do when we see them are designed to make us think and feel things about our ability to change in certain directions, and it doesn't rule out that it's time travel rather than space travel that's involved.
I like Vallée very much. Really endorses his work. I'm glad you plugged it. I didn't want to do. Good calls, aren't they?
Hi, this is Casey, and you're on the air. Hello. I think line two is out.
Maybe.
Hi, this is Casey, and you're on the air.
I got to get my radio here.
Okay.
Okay. I'd like to say that I agree with Tim on getting the inside together before you can do anything on the outside, but doesn't that also apply to the biosphere? Why do we have to go to space to become telepathic and empathic and erratic? Why can't we do it here? I have some more questions.
Well, I think we had to leave the water to climb on the shoreline to develop a technological symbolic civilization. Each time we migrate, we activate new circuits in our nervous system. We literally get smarter. Americans are smarter than Europeans and Africans, and because we're all American Africans, American Europeans, and so forth. Californians are smarter than New Englanders.
Hey, come on. Watch it.
Look out.
My point is that you've got to move to the new environment to activate the new circuits of your nervous system. Now, many won't go. See, because we left many of our ancestors underneath the water. They're still doing the fish thing down there, and they're getting better at it. Maybe the porpoises are evolving to such a point that they're going to teach us something about non-verbal communication. So not everyone is going to go. Let's face that. Just like not everyone moved from 4 feet to 2 feet. We've got to be very kind. I operate from a genetic standpoint. I feel a tremendous familial linkage with all other forms of life. However, I don't want to, in a missionary sense, go down and interfere with the porpoises versus the sharks, or with the Irish Catholics and the Irish Protestants, or the coyotes and the wolves. I want to sympathize with them. I want to empathize with them. We're going to take all forms of life with us up there. They're going to be mini planets up there.
Two of everything.
Two of everything, at least.
Even mosquitoes and tsetse flies.
Absolutely, rattlesnakes. There's all these things are put here for a certain reason. It's going to spin all this
island. Island works okay without snakes.
Well,
I should know that.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, be St. Patrick, leave a few things off.
All right.
BD. With gonorrhea, look at this face.
Gonorrhea is a very interesting disease, really. Think about it.
This man on the phone has more questions. We have to fall silent.
A gonococcus microbe in Saigon a week later shows up in a high school in Kansas City. Now, there's some intelligence there.
That didn't pay plane fare.
And didn't play plane fare.
Hi, do you
have more questions?
I still have the same question. I agree with I think you have to get yourself together internally before you can do anything externally. Now, we've got we that left the ocean and the porpoises who didn't. Now, we're going to destroy the porpoises with our atomic bombs and our pollution. And
our tuna fishing.
And tuna fishing. And I don't really know anybody who's been harmed by a porpoise. Now, they've gotten there. I think they're more together than we are. At least they live more harmoniously with their environment and with their entire universe. So, and we're the ones who were supposedly have gotten together and made the bigger step and gone on to bigger and better things. And now we're responsible for the destruction of the people left behind. So those that were left behind.
Definitely, the ecological intelligence is out to protect the porpoises. Number one, we're going to take porpoises with us. We're going to have little seas up there. We're going to learn. Maybe the only way we can really get in communication with the porpoises is to bring them along up there. Number two, I'm totally opposed to nuclear energy on a planet. Obviously, you shouldn't have nuclear energy down here on a planet. But of course, up in free space, nuclear energy, laser fusion will be used for starship propulsion and so forth. The only way to take care of the pollution is to move the industry up there, to move most of the population up there, and particularly to move the dangerous technology. For example, you can't do genetic research. There's a great unease right now about genetic engineering, because if one mistake in the laboratory occurs, you know, we don't know what's going to happen. But up there, one little mini planet can be designed just for genetic research. So that I'm totally sympathetic with the ecological and pollution problems you raise, and I'm telling you, the only way we can solve these problems is to get most of our technology and many of our people off the planet. Within 100 years, within your lifetime, because you're going to live several hundred years, I would say flatly that half of the people listening to this program will be living, playing, working, or paying resort visits in space within 25 years. And anyone who's listening to this program has the option of living forever. So that but we've got to get off the planet in order to extend the lifespan and to solve the problems of crowding and pollution.
If you're up there in space, though, and you have available kind of an anarchist government of your own, you're doing recombinant DNA technology, you can mine asteroids for U-235, it strikes me that you could also take over the Earth from such a position. It's a nice place to do that, and that may be the fear that's in the back of this man's mind. But what you're saying...
Well, who'd want to take over the Earth?
Earthocentric.
The Earth is...
Born here, and I seriously expect to die here. You know, I may visit space, but I don't want to go to the midpoint between the Earth and the Moon until I've been to China, for example, or maybe even Mexico. I've never been out of the country.
Our motto is this: let the meek inherit the Earth.
Okay,
who wants the Earth? The Earth is simply a pestilence, like you
Yosemite.
Yeah, but you brought up eschatology, which is the doctrine of last things. And I've often thought of you as the Pied Piper, and that legend has its roots way back in early 12th, 13th, 14th century European history, when Europe was swept by bands of people led by men a whole lot like yourselves. The Ratters were some of them. They had huge armies of kids. They walked all over Europe, and they said that the last days were coming. It wasn't NASA. It was Jesus who was going to appear in the heavens and take them away from that. We still see echoes of that today, for example, in the doctrine of the Jehovah's Witnesses, the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, where variously 144,000 or roughly, you know, half the population of Salt Lake City go to heaven with Jesus when the skies are rent asunder, and so forth. I think you're still, I think you're a closet Catholic with a lot of eschatological junk floating around in your head about the last days and taking people away from it before it ends.
No, it's not going to end. Planet Earth is going to continue. It's a nice park. I won't back away from the Catholic thing. As I examine all the religions, you know, I was a Hindu for a while, and I played around with Buddhism and so forth. I think the Catholic Church had the right philosophy. The Catholic Church promises you immortality. It promises you extraterrestrial migration to heaven. And it promises you increased intelligence. That's called the communion of saints. I mean, the hope was that the Catholic Church would give you more intelligent, interesting people to talk to. The Catholic Church, however, sold stock prematurely, and the Catholic Church has always said our kingdom is not of this earth. It's a very otherworldly religion, particularly the Irish, who are not basically Catholics. Of course, the Irish are basically Celtic pagans, but they took enough of that. Yeah, I won't back away from this. I'm an escape artist.
You are what you've been.
It's much better to move out than to fight over the old.
You might at home have any more questions.
Right. I'd like to get you to speak to something that a question that I really don't think that you'll come to terms with. Maybe I'll express it this way. Like from the media aspect of it all, do you think it was just a coincidence that you were put on the same shelf as Charles Manson for a while?
Well, I was put in the heaviest holes in the California system for over 24 months. Over 2 years, I was in solitary confinement. I was in the worst, lowest, down, deep pits that your government has. So I not only met Manson, I met the toughest and meanest men in California. No, it was no accident. They were just trying to, they were pretty mad at me, and they were trying to bury me as deep as they could. I don't think there's any great psycho-legal criminological conspiracy. The correction people are too dumb. I mean, they're not really that interested in brainwashing or behavior modification because they're very happy with the way it's going. They don't want to change prisoners. And it wasn't in any...
Well, they did it at Vacaville for a long time. You know, just last August, the Center for National Security Studies got those documents about the MK and MK Ultra and MK Delta programs, and MK was just a code word, but, you know, mind control misspelled seems to fit in there. And one of the intriguing things about that we noticed in perusing the documents was the fact that the government was buying acid in huge quantities from Sandoz very, very early in the 50s, way in advance of the research that you and Ram Dass, or Dr. Alpert, as he was then known, did at Harvard. When did you first realize that it was what you thought was new hat was old hat to the government?
Oh, we knew. We knew that all this was going on. As a matter of fact, most people don't realize that when we started experimenting with acid, there had been over several thousand psychiatric studies done using LSD on human beings. The problem was, of course, that the psychiatrists didn't know what they were doing.
They were always trying to simulate schizophrenia.
Yeah,
right?
Psychomimetic. Now, you can't understand the conscious movement of the 60s unless you realize that it came out of the do-it-yourself psychotherapy movement of the 50s. See, this is the third wave I've been involved in. It's the third time I've been, you know, a controversial person. In the 50s, I was one of the leaders in the do-it-yourself psychotherapy. When I first started psychology, behavior change was considered a province of the MD psychoanalyst, and there were literally laws. You'd get busted for practicing psychotherapy without an MD, even if you had a PhD.
Right.
So we had to fight, we had to literally fight to take self-change away from the mad doctors and the medicine men.
You give it to Werner Erhard.
The consumer society co-ops everything, sure. We knew that would happen as well, but Werner Erhard's still better because you got more options. You got the average Californian has had Werner, and he's had several gurus, and he's had diet, and he's had massage, and he's had excellent, and he's had Gestalt. So Werner is just one of literally a thousand self-help, choose-your-own guru. And this is a great advance over the way it was in the 50s, when, number one, they said you couldn't change, but if you went in psychoanalysis for 5 years, paying a lot of money, you could get insight into why you can't change. Now, the 50s movement, which said do it yourself, so he was a background for the drug movement of the 60s. Drugs had been around, you know, Baudelaire, Huxley, Michaud,
George Washington.
Yeah, right. Everybody knew that, not to mention Crowley and Gurdjieff, yeah, everybody, all intelligent people, all 10 of them, knew that drugs were a way of changing your mind, but it was always in the idea of the guru or the doctor. And what we did in the 50s and 60s was democratize, allow the middle class person to, here's the tools, do it yourself, make your own mistakes, pick your own guru, pick 10 gurus. Drugs themselves give more options. You can take cocaine or not, you can get drunk or not, you can smoke nicotine or not. This is giving human beings more options over their own body and their own brain, and that's the name of the game to me, giving myself and my friends more chances to move and grow.
You're listening to Dr. Timothy Leary, our guest today on Bonnie Simmons' show, and he'll be with us literally as long as he wants to stay, about 10 more minutes. Okay, we're going to have to break a second and refuel. We will be back with more conversation and your calls to Tim Leary after this.
Supersonic Rocket Ship. Ray Davies and the Kinks. And And I should tell you that there was a mix-up on the Pink Floyd tickets. If you have heard that they were sold out yesterday or the day before, it's not so. They went on sale this afternoon at noon, and you can get Pink Floyd tickets. It's a Bill Graham show. You can check out any Bass outlet in order to get them. Larry Lee, usually so shy, so reticent to speak, has a few questions, and then we'll be going back
to
the phone.
Well, you're paying me to talk. What am I supposed to do? Subpoenaed to testify in court in a case that the government brought against them, would you?
No.
Okay.
The second number one is the government, the last thing in the world the present American government is going to do is harass leftists. They wouldn't touch a case like that with a thousand light year pole.
Well, so after we get off the air, let me tell you what needs to go on. The second question is about Joanna Harker, who is a very familiar figure here because she sort of mounted your defense from KSAN's telephones back in God, what was it, 72, 73, and you left Afghanistan, you left Switzerland for Afghanistan in her company, and that was your downfall. You mentioned double, triple agents and so forth. Did she try to double it or triple it and follow up? Was she working for them? What the heck was going on?
Joanna is not a political person whatsoever. Her concerns are emotional, domestic, erratic.
Did she try to be a political person and fail? Is that it?
Well, I think her basic sympathies are with the liberating forces. But I've never seen her as a... I don't think she's a...
Would she go on the CIA payroll to do that, for example, or DEA, or...
Oh, yeah, she might. If it were, had to do with her love life and excitement, yeah, she might. Yeah, she's very, as I say, non-political, yeah.
Okay, that's an interesting answer to that question.
Hi, this is KSAN, you're on the air.
Yeah, I'd like to ask Tim who publishes his book, Exopsychology, and how much it costs.
It costs, I don't know, about $7 or $8, and it's published by a group called Peace Press in L.A. It's box 69250, Los Angeles.
Will that be available in bookstores?
I don't think so. None of my books have ever been available in bookstores. You have to look for them. They don't make it easy, do they?
Really?
I've never been very popular with the New York literary mafia. I'm not popular with anyone who has an establishment structure in their mind. And certainly the New York literary scene has never been my turf. But you can get the book if you really want it. And the book will change your outlook if you're ready to have your outlook changed.
Right. I'd also like to mention that you talk about the DNA or kind of a psychological force of evolution, but I think a complementary force of evolution, which I model as a vector at a right angle to that one, is the physiological poisoning vector. As some evidence of this, there's been work like Dr. Nikolaev in Russia has fasted schizophrenics and achieved a 70-80% cure rate by putting them afterwards on a vegetarian diet. And Dr. Yayura Tobias in New York has linked criminality with hypoglycemia, and they performed similar...
Oh, Larry.
And Dr. Gil Fillon in Santa Monica has documented evidence that lead poisoning was the main factor in the downfall of Rome.
Yeah, I've heard that, yeah.
So I would propose this as a complementary vector in the same way that the magnetic vector is at a right angle to the electric vector. The physiological vector could be at a right angle to the DNA vector. And if you don't get them both working properly, one can, you know, cancel the other.
Thank you very much, Dr. Ray.
Thank you for the call.
Argue. I see the body as simply the Mercedes-Benz car for the nervous system and for the DNA code. And you're talking about additives and fuels and so forth. Definitely. And I also feel that each human being is very different biochemically, and what works for one may be exactly the wrong. Maybe somebody will need a little more lead. We have to be very careful about generalizations, because I see the human gene stock now as being very volatile and changeable. Every 100 human beings I see, I imagine 100 species may develop from this gene pool. You have to be very gentle with each other about physiological and genetic situations, realizing that we're very different. Even though we have two eyes and listen to rock and roll records, our brains are very different and our bodies are very different, so we got to give each other a lot of room. So I would agree definitely that what you're saying is very important, but let's be cautious about final generalizations.
Do you think that people are more alike than they are different, or vice versa? Think about that.
Yeah, I'll think about it. I'll come back another time. I think it's useful and funny to believe that we're all robots. Sometimes at gatherings, I go around the room and I say to people, what percentage of your behavior is robot? Now, the person that never listens, you know, the guy, you know, he'll say 0% is robot. I say, oh, yeah, right, okay. I find that the people who say that 99% of their behavior is robot, I find them more interesting. Now, I think it's fun for me to believe that my behavior is 99.999999% robot. But it's that last one little fraction of a percentage that gives you the individual chance to work back through all the robotry, understand the machinery, and then you become the robot who has opened up the wiring and is inquiring about such questions as who built it, why are we robots, what tools, who's using us, and that sort of thing. So that when I say, in my book I say, it's only when you understand how much a robot you are that you have any hope of recapturing your individuality and cutting down the percentage of your robothood.
The book, by the way, will be on sale tomorrow night at the lecture at the College of Marin.
Yeah, I would say also that, in my opinion, we're more alike biochemically than we're unalike, because genetically, each individual is predisposed to react in a certain way to the same elements. Say, Dr. Feingold has found that food additives and food colorings are responsible greatly for hyperkinesis in children, and he's achieved a 50-60% instantaneous overnight cure rate just by removing these elements from the children's diet, and it results in a massive change of their behavior.
There's another aspect here, too, which I must talk about. I believe the nervous system is much more important than the body. The nervous system of the brain understands exactly what's happening in every tissue, organ, and probably even cell in the body. So that many of these so-called cures which astound us, and which, by the way, are often in opposition. You know, sometimes a high-protein diet will do it, sometimes a low-protein diet will do it. The reason is that the brain somehow is getting turned on to self-help or faith and so forth. So that there are great mysteries involved in cures, which I think will be explained when we understand more about the brain. The real breakthrough that's occurring now is in understanding the brain, the biofeedback stuff that's being done here in San Francisco, the left brain, right brain stuff that's being done. And the more we understand about the brain, the less important the physiological and the biochemical situation will be.
But according to the model that I just outlined, they're both equal vectors.
I'll agree with that, yeah. I'll agree with that.
Also, the latest is that nuclear fusion occurs in biological organisms due to the work of the French chemist Kervin. He has found and he's working on it. It's still controversial, but the evidence looks pretty conclusive that nuclear fusion occurs in biological organisms, and the scientists can't really explain this as yet, and this opens up incredible fields.
That's the craziest thing I ever heard. In what biological organisms is nuclear fusion occurring?
Every biological organism. As a matter of fact, for instance, cows eat only grass, essentially, but they have plenty. Their bones are strong. They're getting calcium from somewhere, and there's virtually no calcium in grass, and there's a lot of other things that aren't in grass, and what's essentially happening is that other elements are combining, they're fusing to create all these things that, you know, the various organisms need.
Well, don't let the Sierra Club hear that that's going on inside cows, or we'll all be drinking soy milk. We're going to give away some more tickets, so we're going to pause. Thanks for your call.
All right.
Bonnie?
Thank you. Just what I was going to say. Hi, this is Kate Daniel on the air. Hello? Time is out. Yeah.
Okay.
Hi, this is Kate Daniel on the air.
Yeah, I'd like to thank Dr. Larry for a good book called The Psychedelic Experience, because, like, I recommend it to all my friends, younger or older, who are interested in experimenting with drugs, to read that book. You hear me?
Yeah, thank you. That was based, by the way, on the Tibetan Book of the Dead. that nothing I've said today or ever is original. I have no new ideas. I'm simply, think of me as your friendly broadcaster from station KDNA. I'm simply your meteorological weatherman who comes in, and that book you're talking about is simply a kind of a pop version of one of the oldest books in spiritual philosophic history, the Tibetan Book of the Dead.
Yeah, well, these people who are interrogating you are trying to put you on some sort of Jesus Christ trip, like they're really being self-righteous, like they don't know what it is to go to prison and to suffer.
Listen, in prison was a piece of cake. I learned more in prison. You people out here had to live through the Nixon administration on the streets. I just went in a cocoon, and I was in solitary confinement. I had as my roommate one of the most interesting minds in the world, so don't feel sorry about the prison thing. I learned a lot from it, and I also built up an incredible bank account of good feeling, which I'm now spending recklessly. Let's end with that one, okay?
Thank you for the call. Oh, I have control.
He's got a split.
Can't do it. He's got to go. Thank you for coming in, though. It was great. We've been talking to Tim Leary for the past hour and a half or so. This is KFAN in San Francisco. And what do I have up?
I really would like to share, David Boyd. Number one, I think that the movie Man to Fell to Earth is an extremely interesting movie. I think Nicholas Rogue is a very new director because he's a photographer. He's really into motion, moving pictures. And I think the new David Bowie album, Low, the first side, not the second side, has like seven songs. Each song is like architecture. It's rock chain. Bowie's voice changes, the rhythm changes. It's Brian Eno, of course, that helped out. And I recommend, I play that before our lectures, by the way, to get the audience in the mood. I play a little reggae, and then I play David Bowie loud. And as soon as there are complaints about it's too loud, I put it to the pain threshold, because Bowie is, I think, the real musical genius of the 70s.
What do you like, sound and vision or crashing the same car?
I like Be My Wife.
Oh, okay.
I'm in love, by the way.
Cue that up
again.
Really? Congratulations.
You're at a higher level than ever, he said.
Thank you again.